And then also, in terms of their physical condition or their school achievement, they do. It's all out of there as government. Most of the government
departments, especially, you go out for money. With a specific plan in place or trying to achieve a specific mandate, and obviously in spending your money, you're trying to achieve certain objectives, and then in spending it you must also comply with laws and regulations. As you see also, if you refer to our audit report, you'll see it's a report on financial statements on the first page, and if you finish to the second page, you see it has a section that deals with the reporting on other legal and regulatory requirements. So that's why now we deal with compliance with laws and regulations and your predetermined objectives. And then, from the entities and the department side, there's a check of regulations in terms of the compliance elements from a financial model point of view, the framework for managing code and performance information, the FMPPI, public service regulations, which deals with the human resource element. And then there's one a specific piece of legislation which contains some requirements from an audit and accounting point of view which are applicable to both the AG and the department. So you'll see it's got an arrow showing that connecting the two separate bodies on top. So the first one is section 38, which provides us general responsibilities of the accounting officer. Now, Chairperson, if you read section 38 of the PFMA, it actually has almost, I think, 12 or 13 key detailed steps which are required of an accounting officer in terms of the management of the financial affairs of a department. Anywhere from maintaining proper internal controls to how you must deal with irregular expenditure, to how you must deal with performance information, asset management, all of it is contained in section 38. Section 14, that is from the accounting officer's reporting responsibilities. First part thereof is one, subsection 1, A and B, which just says the accounting officer, depending and executing your day-to-day functions, you must maintain proper record keeping, and then B says you must also then at the end of the financial year prepare financial statements, and then subsection C says you must submit those financial statements to the AGSA for order 2 months after the end of the financial year. And then, from the AG's point of view, section 40 subsection 2 then says, AG, you have 2 months to audit this financial statement from the date of submission. So which means when they submit 31 May, we have 2 months audit up until 31 July for PFMA cycle, and we issue our report with the 31 July. And then, as far as section 51 and 55 are concerned, those are just dealing with the responsibility from an entity's point of view. The first part of the PFMA deals with the responsibilities of the accounting officers from departmental side, and then the latter part is used with the public entities. Okay, so Chairperson, now that we know why we are here, the next slide basically tells us what we do in the public sector audit. So what does an audit in public sector contain at a high level? So there's always expectation of what the AG must do and the AG can do, but then obviously there's a reality and then an understanding of what it is exactly that an audit is and what exactly is an audit in public sector and what an audit does not do in public sector. So the first part of it is, you see, we provide assurance on the financial statements that they are free from material misstatements. So because we do a sample basis, we look at a financial statement, but the sampling will represent what's in the population. We will say, I've looked at it, but it's fairly represented. That's why our conclusion, if you look at it on the second page of this white document, it says, although you have a qualified opinion, and I say except for the issues which I have done, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the entity. So that means that we looked at it from the point of view that it's just free from material misstatements. And then we provide a report on the usefulness and the reliability of the performance report, which entities are reporting in their own performance report. So they can report whatever they want. We just come and then we look at the mandate, we look at how you've reported, and then we provide a conclusion based on what you've reported to your performance report. And then the third bullet point there talks to our reporting on material not compliant with the relevant legislation. So we do not go and provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with. And then also, we do not go and identify fraud. Although we've got a responsibility to design our process in such a way that we will be able to detect material fraud and error, our main purpose is not there to go and detect fraud. It is up to management to have proper controls in place to make sure that their own processes can, first of all, prevent. And then if they are not able to prevent, they can detect and identify instances of fraud. And in conclusion, also, we do not provide any assurance that service delivery has been achieved. So again, it leads to the second step on the left-hand side where we say only report on what management has reported to us in terms of the annual performance report. So they report and we just say whether we agree or don't agree. So we don't say whether service delivery has been achieved to that stringent degree. So on the next slide, we dealt now with what an audit in public sector does and does not do. These are the types of product services that we offer in the regularity part of the audit. So annually we come, we verify when there's no information omitted in the financial statement. We look at the full application of the international auditing standards in this regard. And then as part of the regularity audit process, over and above doing what we do, we know that financial information is driven by financial systems. All entities have financial systems where they account for their financial affairs. Departments use the basic accounting system, which is commonly referred to as BAS. So we have a specific unit which is called Information Systems Auditors, which come in and assess the IT environment and identify any risks which could have potentially resulted in inaccurate reporting or incomplete reporting. And then we have our performance auditors. The performance auditors are discretionary audits. Normally we do this when there's a problem identified or when there's a request. And this one looks at what we commonly refer to as the 3 E's. So I'm pretty sure some of the members may have heard of the 3 E's. We look at effectiveness, efficiency, and then also economy. So basically, did you procure whatever you procured in an economic manner? And then when you were you using it efficiently and sparingly? And then ultimately, did you reach your end goal of what you requested the funds for? And then we've got investigations and other special audits, but these are just an independent process. Although we do not do investigations to the definition of what we would commonly understand as an investigation, because there are other bodies out there who are doing investigations. We are the SIU, the public protector. So as an office of AG, what we do is if there's a problem that is identified or a request, we look at the merits of it, and if there's any of those interlinks or areas of commonality, we refer those to the public protector or the SIU. These units are predominantly set up to look at our own processes as part of the regularity audit and make sure they identify risks, so the special risks in terms of procurement and special contracts, etc. Okay, this one I'm just going to talk very high level to it, although it's a very beautiful looking slide. Basically, it just sets for the annual audit process. So on an annual basis, I go to the department. We first of all have to agree the terms of the engagement. I tell them what I'm coming to do, what is expected of them, their responsibilities. We sign an engagement letter, and then we plan the audit, and then we go and look at the risk assessment. Are any risks? What I should be looking at in terms of my audit, in terms of what has happened, what has informed the entity in the current year, any changes in leadership, changes in allocation, any spending, any identified issues in the media that could potentially indicate problems. And then we go in and design and perform procedures for the risk which we identify to make sure, like we said, those financial statements do not contain those material misstatements. And once we're done with our other thing, we look at now the reporting. The reporting that we do consists of two elements. The first element is the management report, and the second one is the audit report, which we are all familiar with. The management report is not a published document, it just goes to management. So that is where we now contain all the detail of our audit findings, the procedures we perform, and then we all identify root causes and make a recommendation for improvement to management. And the audit report is the one that's published in the annual report. So this is a public document now, it's for public consumption. And this one is the one where we table, it's included in the annual report, and this one contains all the material findings on financial statement, usefulness of the performance reporting, and then also any instances of material non-compliance with key legislation, and then also deficiencies in the internal control. So, again, if we look at what everything is saying here, and we look at this white document, you'll see we've got the financial statements, and then you'll see we've got the audit of performance information, the key findings on the second and the third page. And then on the last page, we've got, on the fourth page, we've got the material non-compliance identified. And then in the end, we tell you what the internal control deficiencies are which we identified, which resulted in all of those material findings which are reported on the audit report. Sorry, Chairperson, my colleague is saying I tend to speak quite fast when I get excited. So, please, if there are any questions or comments, please feel free to stop us and ask questions as we go along. Are there any questions at this stage, Chairperson? Maybe just to take a breather, too.
We're still on track, colleague?
Yeah.
Are we happy?
Okay. Thank you. So, Chairperson, as mentioned earlier, one of the key audits that we normally conduct in the office of the AG is what we commonly refer to as a performance audit. So that's where now we look at the performance of what you have achieved in terms of the funds that you requested. So what is a performance audit in a nutshell? Performance audit just basically is an independent auditing process where now you go and evaluate measures that were instituted by management in how they were procuring their resources. That was economically done, efficiently used, and also effectively in terms of achieving its goal. So we've got three headings there in terms of the focus areas that we look at. So the ultimate outcome is we look, did we have value for money from what we were doing here? And this audit now is the one that now looks at, did we actually get service delivery as part of the whole spending process? So this one is, those are the two little, or three little differences from the normal auditing process of regularity audit, where we just come and look at the financial statements and the compliance and the performance reporting. So this actually just goes that first step further to say, did we achieve our goal? So you ask for money, you said you are going to achieve the following, so we now look at how you were using it throughout, and then ultimately did you reach our goal. This slide here, Chair, so I'll take 2 minutes to talk to this slide, which is the arrow with the timeline, is slide number 11 at the bottom. This slide basically just sets forth the important timelines in the audit cycle in the PF from a PFMA point of view. So 31 March, where does it come from? The PFMA defines the financial year under subsection 1 of the definition as 31 March. So it's defined in the piece of legislation 31 March is your end of financial year. Then 31 May is the one that we just dealt with under the PFMA, the submission of the financial statements by the auditees to the AG for audit. So basically from 31 March to 31 May, the departments have got 2 months to prepare their financial statements. So they can maintain their normal processes throughout the year, but in those 2 months they must now prepare the formal submission documents. And from 31 May to 31 July is now where the Office of the AG has 2 months to audit the financial statements. So this is where we now normally conduct our processes in order to be able to form some form of conclusion. And then the next date, Chairperson, is actually a little bit more important from our point of view where we are sitting here as committee, because in terms of the legislation, it's actually 5 months. It says you're 5 months after the end of the financial year, you table your report in Parliament. So 31 March, 5 months would normally, not normally, it's actually 31 August. So the reason why we have 30 September is because there's a clause in the PFMA which results in some of the executive authorities being able to come and request for a 1 month extension. So normally we found that the practice is to submit by 30 September anyway. So we've put it at 30 September, and the reason why this is important for us, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is obviously, if the information of the entity has not been tabled, it means it's not information which is for public consumption, and which means we cannot come and share it in the open platform, the outcomes at this stage, until such time that it's been tabled. Only once it has been tabled, then only does it become information which is for public consumption, and then we can come and engage on that. So you'd excuse us normally if you maybe thought you could request the agency to quickly come and brief you regarding the audit process. We can't do it until the formal tabling has happened, and that's why the date is quite important. And then the last one just talks to the GR, we call the general report. The general report, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is a consolidated report. So we look at PFMA, we look at all the national provincial departments, all the public entities, we consolidate all the outcomes, and we give it to you in one report. And what we try and do in that report, we try and look at the root causes. What happened, what went wrong, why are these material findings there, and we put in key recommendations of how these could be addressed in order to make sure that we improve our audit outcomes. Chairperson, this next slide deals with why we are here, the Office of the AG, or the report that we issue, the end of or culmination of all our audit procedures, is the right document, the audit report. This is normally contained in the annual report, as mentioned earlier, of the entities. What I'll do now is, I'll request all of you to please refer to this white document here. From the start, we'll start from the start. So I'd like to look at the structure, so you can link it with a physical document and see what it looks like instead of just being there on the slide. So the first part which says we report on the financial statements. So you'll see it says part A, report on the financial statements, which is in bold. Or maybe Chairperson, for indulgence, just before I start, the heading there says report of the AG to Parliament, and then on a vote number, and then it'll give you the name of the department. So normally, the C there, it says to Parliament, it will be for all national departments. For provincial departments, it will have the name of the provincial legislature on it, and for municipalities, it will have the council's name on it. So it is just the C there for the different types of spheres of government. And the report on the financial statements, you'll see there's an introduction part. The introduction part tells you what we have done, the conclusion, or not conclusion, but what we have done in terms of the department and what we look at. And then the second portion we use for the counting of the responsibilities is quite important, because we've dealt with certain sections in our previous deliberation session 40, which says the accounting officer, you must report, you must prepare financial statements. This one just basically says the accounting officer responsibility in terms of the preparation and fair presentation of the financial statement in accordance with the framework they are using. For municipalities, this will be the South African standards of GRAP, but for national departments, it is the modified cash standards which they are using as prescribed by National Treasury. And then the next component is the AG responsibility. And again, that, we've touched on it, the public audit act, why we are here, and then any other general notice. And what is important also to note is the office of the AG utilizes the international standards of auditing. So it's not for a lack of a bad phrase, a Mickey Mouse auditing process that we follow. It is an internationally accepted auditing standard practice, so we can benchmark our process against the best in the world in terms of the auditing standards that we apply in forming the conclusion. And then the next portion which is highlighted and bolded there, that's the opinion, which is we're going to spend a little bit more time on that along with the predetermined objectives. There's one or two more detailed slides which just aims to provide a little bit more detail with regard to that. And you'll see in the first page there, the next section that's included there is the basis for qualification. Now, it doesn't mean all entities are qualified. We just included this one as a worst-case scenario so that you are able to see the structure of what it would look like, what it would read like in terms of our mock audit process for our training. So we've got the three reporting areas there, or the qualified areas, and what is important to know in terms of the qualifications, you'll see we give you an introductory paragraph of what went wrong, what was not complied with in terms of this actual document here. I'll do one for paragraph number 8. So paragraph number 8 says, the department did not adequately control and safeguard its movable tangible assets as required by the legislation, section 3, general reporting responsibilities of the accounting officer as touched on earlier. And then what the effect was. So it resulted in the tangible assets, which are then included in the financial statement, being overstated with their amount. So we're saying they didn't have adequate controls in place to safeguard their assets. So the assets are gone, they are reporting something. So the balance that they are reporting, if it's 100, and we went into testing, we're saying it should be less, it's not 100 because the assets are gone. They didn't safeguard the assets and have controls in place. So you see the structure of the qualification paragraph will tell you what went wrong, resulting in, and then what the impact is that resulted in the qualification. And then, Sarasen, I think for the purposes of the interest of time, I'm going to skip to the opinions. So if you look at the opinions and the way which we've highlighted them, you recall even in the video touched on the different opinions. The video mentioned 5. We deliberately have 4 here because if you look at the top, we say the financial audit opinion. So those are dealing with your financial statements, how you are accounting for 1 plus 2 equals 3. And we are basically saying your debit and your credit. We're just looking at that from this point of view. So the first one we get is unqualified audit opinion, which is a good opinion, but it's not the best. So unqualified opinion means that your financial statements were able to fairly present your account. So whether your accounts are, you didn't achieve or you did things wrong, but at least you were able to account them correctly even in doing wrong. You debited correctly and you credited correctly, and that's what you're reporting correctly. So we say you are unqualified, you reported correctly. And then the second one is qualified. The qualified is where you overall did okay, but maybe one area like we have in the report. You see, we're just saying assets are incorrect. If you look at the qualified opinion under paragraph 9 in this document, it says, in my opinion, except for the effects of the matters described above, the rest of the financial statements fair present. So qualified is, except for, it's unfortunate you need to work on, it's still frowned upon in the sense that obviously it shows that there are significant deficiencies in your internal control systems and processes. And then the disclaimer is, which is probably, I know some members are familiar with the word disclaimer, but what does it mean? The disclaimer just basically tells us that we were not able to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence. So whenever the department or the entity is reporting to you, if they say, I've got an assets which are worth 100, I didn't get information or evidence to say it is 100. So that's a disclaimer. Disclaimer just basically means a limitation of scope, and I was able to express an opinion on those balances because I didn't get an evidence. The adverse one, which is probably, both of them are red. The one is, I don't want to say the one is a lesser evil, but they are both highlighted in red. But this one is now where it's a big disagreement of management. So management is reporting something, they are telling us something, but when you go and you audit, our audit evidence indicates something totally different. So then it becomes an adverse opinion, total disagreement, and management does not want to fix financial statements. So our chairperson, as referred to in the video, if you come to So, just before I continue, we spoke about predetermined objectives as well. So, what is predetermined objectives? Predetermined objectives is basically our strategic plan. It is what we predetermined, the objectives that we want to achieve in our day-to-day activities as we go execute and run our day-to-day process. So the definition thereof of we, or the order of is the annual order of whatever they reported against what they had set out to achieve initially. So Jefferson, in the future, honorable members, somebody says, what are the predetermined objectives? I would like you to have this frame of reference in mind. There are three main components. So the first one is compliance. So you say, do we have a plan? Yes or no, you are required to have a plan in terms of the legislation. So do you have a plan, yes or no? Does the plan meet the minimum requirements in terms of the 3 years, the minimum structure as required by the legislation? And then also in terms of timeliness, your plan is required to be submitted annually for national departments 10 days before the national budget vote speech. So you must look at those timelines, deadlines, make sure there's a process in place and they submit on a timeliness basis. The next step is, now that you have a plan, it's good you have a plan, we are happy that you have a plan. But how useful is your plan? What is your plan telling us in terms of your mandate? Is your plan aligned to your mandate? Does the person on the street understand exactly, they take a plan, what it is that you're trying to achieve? Would they understand where we are working towards? What is the common goal that you're trying to achieve? So that's a usefulness. We look at how measurable are your targets and objectives, how specific are they, how relevant are they to your mandate and the overall policy and course of the national development plan, etc. Then, how did you have a plan? And we understand what you have set yourself out to achieve. Now you come to the end of the year, now you must report. So those are three main components. Do you have a plan, complying with the plan, with the requirements of the plan? How useful is your plan? And now when you report, how accurate, complete, and reliable is your reporting? Now this is where we look at the performance report. We take it, we make sure that evidence, we make sure that if you say you have achieved, there is backed up by evidence, and indeed what you are reporting to the public is a true reflection. So if somebody has performance information, Jefferson, I would beg of you to please just, this guy is very important, keep it as a frame of reference. Compliance, how useful is it? And when you are reporting, how credible is your reporting in terms of the completeness and accuracy? Then, we spoke about the performance auditing and then the predetermined objectives now. I'm just going to focus on the very bottom line where we got the red highlight today. That just basically gives us the difference between what a performance audit is and how we audit performance information or the predetermined objectives. The most fundamental difference is what is the assurance process which we do annually, which then provides credibility on how they have reported on their performance. The other one is a factual report of whether goods and services were acquired economically, whether they were applied efficiently, and whether they were managed effectively towards achieving the desired goals. So those are the two fundamental differences between what a performance audit is and what audit of predetermined objectives is. Jefferson, I'll spend a little bit of time in this slide. I'm sure many of us have heard the term before, clean audit. So this is what the definition of clean audit essentially is. And I'd like to be a little bit naughty and say, clean audit was not a definition that we came up with in the Office of the AGO Conduct. This concept was developed under the previous minister of COCTA, who said we've got a specific goal for local government, we want to go and have them clean by 2014. Now the challenge in that being, now when you say clean, as Office of the AG, we have to say, what are the legislative requirements placed upon you? And then once you have met those, and only once you have met those, would you be considered clean. So when you look at the requirements and the onus is upon entities, we've dealt with it now just earlier, Chairperson. You must be financially unqualified. So your debit and credit balance, 1 plus 2 must equal 3. So then you are fine, you've got one check, which means you've got one tick right in the one of the requirements. The second step is you must have no material findings on compliance with laws and regulations. Remember, Chairperson, we get money from the state, we are bound by laws and regulations in our country, so you cannot go and say, I've accounted everything correctly in my debit and credit, but I was flouting all laws and regulations in getting to the final product or end goal. So you must be compliant with the laws and the regulations, and there must be no material findings reported on the audit report. The last aspect of it is, because we are also reporting on performance information, there must be no material findings on your performance report. So, you should have had a plan, you should have submitted your plan by the required timelines if you take into account the previous slide that we did. Your plan should have been useful, it should have been talking to what it is that you want to achieve, it should be understandable, and then finally, when you actually report as well, that you are reporting to a fair reflection based on your actual achievements. Some of the best practices that we suggest to entities when we go out, maybe some members might have heard of this, we call it the dashboard, the smiley faces. On a quarterly basis, we go to the entities, we do a high-level assessment of the control status of the controls, and we provide them with feedback. And these are the principles that we look at. And these were also touched in the video, where we look at your daily reconciliation process, your record keeping, your preparation of financial statements, your adherence and review and monitoring of compliance with laws and regulations, and overall your governance. Do you have an internal audit function? Do you have an audit committee which is functioning and providing those governance structures? This slide I'm going to talk about. Now we get to the role of oversight, Chairperson. Chairperson, are we still fine in the room? Am I not losing you? Are still
no.
Members are still fine. Yeah, they mustn't bombard me with 10 million questions in there. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the role of oversight. This is a basic oversight model that we obtain from one of the oversight documents here in Parliament. So if you look at it, you've got Parliament or Provincial Legislature or the Municipal Council, which are the three levels of oversight bodies that we referred to earlier on as well. These oversight bodies will go and determine the direction in which we want the country to go into. So basically we develop our policy and we say this is what we want to achieve long term. And that now further cascades down into the strategic plan. So you have to take the National Development Plan, for example. It's an overall overarching document which sets forth a major direction we must take in our country with a long-term view. So what it then does is each specific department has a responsibility if you look at the way in which it's set up. So you take your chunk, and you take your chunk, and you break it down, and you must now go and implement the plan of how you are going to achieve your chunk, which is now where we come with a strategic plan for each department or each sector or each specific sector. So the first element in this whole oversight model is strategic plan, where they take the strategic plan and their piece of policy which they are supposed to achieve, develop the plan, and then once they're done, they go and ask for money. So that's operational planning and budgeting. So every year we do an APP and we ask for money to be able to achieve our performance which we have specified. Then we set the target and we allocate resources. We make sure that we've got adequate resources in order for us to be able to achieve the strategic objectives set up. And then under the step number three there, which talks about implementation and in-year monitoring, so now the department go and implement, and obviously on a quarterly basis they come here and they brief us as a portfolio committee in terms of their processes, so we must hold them accountable, and this is how now we fit into the whole process. And then number four is now when they come in the end of the year, after we've quarterly reviewed them, we've provided them with corrective action, we've guided them, and they implemented our corrective action to see did we achieve our goals and our targets, yes or no, and then if not, we do the necessary adjustments and we adjust accordingly after the assessment, and then we start again the whole process next year. So that's just the oversight model, how it flows on an annual basis. Now, Chairperson and honorable members, you see I've intentionally put the steps there, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So how did we understand more? It's just high-level oversight models. What are the key considerations that we should consider as a committee when we are involved in this process? The first one is the strategic planning. So we must ask, is your strategic plan in line with the legislative requirements? Do you have a strategic plan that talks and covers the MTF period? Inquire from the department, do they have any challenges? What are your challenges that hamper you from? Because it's one thing if they come here with a nice plan, with objectives, but they know they've got challenges and they will not be able to implement the plan. So we must ask them, do you have challenges? What are the challenges that you have? Is it capacity constraints, budget constraints? You must let us know now so that we can have initiatives to address them. And then we will evaluate how success will be measured. So they can have a nice plan, but you must ask as well, how will you be able to say whether you've achieved or not? Because if I look at this plan, I cannot see how we will be able to measure you in the end. And that's why we're talking about the performance information and the smart run support. The second step is the budgeting and the review consideration. So as an oversight body, ideally, and without running too prescriptive check, we must be able to understand the mandate of the entity which you are dealing with. But once you understand the mandate, that will allow for us to be able to determine the adequate budget and resources allocated so that they can achieve their strategic objectives. Is the strategic plan and the budget aligned to the National Development Plan as well as the State of the Nation Address initiatives? So we must look at those high level. Otherwise, those initiatives in the National Development Plan will never get implemented if the guys who are supposed to implement the strategic plan are not even talking to those initiatives. And then we must analyze high expenditure, look at trend analysis, are there significant increases? Last year this budget was $1 million, why this year it's $1 billion? So they must be able to explain what has changed so significantly in the course of the direction that requires so much funds. And those are clear, sometimes indicators of either poor planning or a significant change which may pose a challenge later on. You don't want guys to come and overpromise, and then when they come and report, they will tell you, no, we couldn't achieve because of X, Y, and Z. So it must be clearly identified if they will be able to achieve it. Is it relevant and is it attainable? And the other one is just talk to the implementation quarterly. We must determine are they spending in line with the strategic plan priorities, are they on track? But they can't come at the end of the third quarter, chairperson, and they report third quarter, and then they're still looking, and you look at the budget spending, it's only 25% spent. So by then you're looking at 75% spending to make sure that they are aligned with achieving it at the end. So those are, or they come for the first quarter and you already see 75% of the budget spent. Then they need some exercise going on and say, what is happening here? What please analyze for us what's happening, and they must be able to provide explanations for this. And then they must, I'm just going to skip to the reporting part now, where it's just the annual reporting, where they come, they report on their compliance with the Appropriation Act, and then how they effectively and efficiently utilize their resources. So, Jefferson, this is one of the key slides in our presentation that I would hit, that if you go home tonight and you, instead of reading the novel, please take this slide and just go through it again. You'll see these are some of the key considerations which we suggest oversight should be asking those questions in those key steps in the oversight model. So our contribution to oversight, now we've dealt with what the AG does. Now we've dealt with more or less the oversight model contained. So how do we link the two together in terms of what we do for you? So this is now chairperson, I now am at your service and at your mercy, and I say we basically provide the audit reports to the portfolio committee before the BRRR process, so that at least you have the information in your evaluation, in your assessment, so that when you conclude, at least you've taken into consideration this material findings in your processes going forward. We update the portfolio committees on progress of the current year audits. We share those significant risks we identify, and also we provide feedback on the smiley faces dashboard report, so the red faces, the yellow faces, and green faces. And then one of the key initiatives as well is we look at annual performance plan on an annual basis. So we look at it, does it conform to the SMART principle? We provide input to management, so that by the time it comes to the portfolio committee, at least it's gone through a review that then you're approving. So for the current chairperson, for 14-15, that 2014-15 plan, we've already reviewed already beginning of the year before they even submitted it to Parliament. And then we have roadshows after the tabling of the general report for both the PFMA and MFMA cycle, and then a regular follow-up on the implementation of resolutions. So you as a committee sit here, you give resolutions to the entities, the departments, they must go and implement. So because we are close to them on the ground, we do our audit processes, we all quickly do a quick follow-up. How far are you? What are the challenges? And we report feedback to you, Chairperson, from an independent point of view to see whether your resolutions have actually been taken seriously and are being implemented. And we also assist in capacity building of members via the Association of Public Accounts Committees. What we normally do is we also have training with the secretaries and the researchers. Same training more or less, when we give them also the information, that when you ask your researcher question, they're able to understand and know where to go look for the information, etc. And then the second last one, which I intentionally left for the last bullet point, is our intention for the chairpersons. We, as office of the AG, endeavor to, where we cannot come and brief the entire platform in the overall committee, we at least make sure that we have some form of engagement with the chairperson, we brief the chairperson on some of these issues here, and I'm aware that the chairperson has had an engagement quite recently with our business executive, Mr. Laurent Van Vieren, where probably similar engagements will have taken place with regard to the risk in history of the entity. So, chairperson, now the next slide, slide number 24, we do the combined assurance model. So combined assurance is basically says, by the time a set of annual report is published, it has gone through certain processes. So all those people in the process are included in the value chain. So this is a value chain of when we get to this annual report that is being produced and tabled that is now for public consumption. So first of all, management. When you are conducting your day-to-day activities, you are required to have specific controls in place to make sure that you are accounting for your stuff, you are providing assurance in terms of the numbers that you are accounting for in the reporting. Accounting officers must hold officials accountable, and they must make sure they have those internal controls, and especially with quarterly and annual reporting, that they have proper processes in place. And then the executive authority, by providing that throughout monitoring and leadership, and making sure that we are steering toward the right direction. And then the second level that we get now is we have the financial results that are produced by management. But remember, we still have something called the internal audit function and the audit committee. So those results now get tabled to them. So the internal controls were working. Now they come to these oversight bodies These oversight bodies now look at these financial results, and they must also make sure they also have processes in place to be able to provide assurance on those figures by rigorously reviewing them, making sure metrics make sense, and stuff is adequately supported, is complete, reliable, and accurate. And then the last level that we get is our independent assurance provider, which is now very high level. So management produces the financial results. It goes into an audit, and audit committee also reviews and provides assurance. Now we come to the last step, which is now where we are setting a portfolio committee. Now we review, we provide our exercise our oversight responsibility, making sure we also provide credibility to this process. To our quarterly reporting, we're holding them accountable, making sure they implement our action plan, so that if that annual report is published for the National Department of Human Development, the public can take that report and know that it goes through all those levels of assurance, and it is the credible, reliable, and complete information. So, Chairperson, in the briefing process, please bear with me, remember this is the last two slides, I promise. The first slide that I'd like to talk to with regard to the briefing process pertains to the tools. So when you are going to have a briefing, these are some of the key documents you would like to consider in your preparation work. And then Chairperson, the rest of our name is prescriptive, but it's just a consideration. So we say, please consider the audit report, which is included in the annual report, the performance report. When we come to brief you, we will normally provide a formal briefing document as well. So we'll give you a formal briefing document which contains the outcomes of the root causes at high level. And then also consider the accounting officer and the audit committee's reports. These two bodies normally contain a contextualized version of how they have seen the affairs or how the entity has failed. So they'll kind of add a little bit of flair, explain certain things. So some stuff may not necessarily be relating to financial information. So it might be something that's important for us to consider from a service delivery point of view, but it doesn't have financial impact, so it may not be covered in the audit report. So at least from that point of view, you can see what they are saying, how they are deeming themselves to have failed. And then the E&E as well. Chairperson, the reason why the E&E is important is because this is a document where our funds have been appropriated. We went to Parliament, we asked certain money, saying we will achieve certain goals, or got certain goals and targets in mind, so we must look at. But the E&E actually gives information for 3 years going forward. So you can now see any trend or any patterns or any specific key objectives which they have set themselves out to achieve in the future. And then how they document it. Because some departments, if they document something in the E&E, they will go ask for the money. The money is appropriated, but when you look at the strategic plan and how they've reported, they're not even covering those key initiatives which they ask the money for in the E&E. And then ultimately also an important document, State of the Nation Address, SONA, as well as the budget vote speeches. So those are normally, like at a high level, will set the direction of the country. So it's important that our strategic planning at grassroots level is aligned to this process. Otherwise, we might never achieve the direction in which we are trying to go because the implementers are not aligned to it. Last slide, Chairperson. The briefing process. So what this basically tells us, it's just a high level process flow. So it is reporting by the department and entity, so they must first come and they must report reliable, accurate, and complete annual reports. We review the reports in this whole process, and then we ensure that they are complete, reliable, and indeed accurate. And then the oversight bodies must ensure that we understand and we obtain an understanding of the mandate of the entities, and then we scrutinize the annual report to make sure that we understand what's contained in it and we understand what's happening in the department before we have the actual briefing. And when we have the actual briefing process, we will come and brief you on the root causes and the audit outcomes. The root causes are normally in the key focus areas, and then during this process where we help to analyze and understand the root causes of the audit outcomes, and then we make recommendations. We'll say, because they had significant challenges in accounting for their affairs, we recommend it to management that they must do monthly financial statements, because if they do the disciplines monthly, it will result in them producing accurate financial statements at the end of the year. So make those recommendations to address the deficiencies. And then, obviously, I can only propose recommendations, Chairperson, you are still an institution on your own. So the oversight committees must normally issue their findings, and then you will make your own recommendations based on your own observations, all the information that is presented to you. And based on those, then, we normally suggest that the recommendations must conform to the SMART principle. You must tell them, listen, you must come on a quarterly basis, come and report, or you must come and report by a specific date, and this is what I want to see. So the recommendations must be quite smart in trying to help, hold them accountable. And then the action plans, the entities must now go and develop action plans based on the recommendations which were then resolved by the committee. And then from that point onwards, we must then also still follow up. So we can make recommendations, resolutions, But the entities must still go and implement them so the committee will be able to have certain processes in place to be able to follow the progress with regard to the implementation. Chairperson, I know that a mouthful and I speak quite fast. I hope the committee was able to stay with me. But having said that, Chairperson, this is my story. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That's his story. That's the briefing and the workshop from the Auditor General's office. Remember, this is a general workshop that the one that will deal now specifically with the annual report itself is still coming, but we've felt that before that one comes, we should at least have the general principles and the understanding of how that will be. Any comments? Any questions? Any questions? Mr. Chole, you have your hand up. Anybody else? Mr. Tabashe, Nganga, you have your hand up. Anybody else? Okay, let's take those hands for now. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chairperson, we must thank the Auditor General's office because of the information that they provided to us. It helped us actually to understand the procedures and the process of auditing. But what I want to find, Chairperson, is I want to get the qualifying method versus the key auditor. If they're talking about the unqualified and the with findings and the clear auditing, what is the difference between the unqualified with no findings and the clear audit?
Clean.
Yes, clean audit.
Okay.
Clean audit. Okay. And the other question is the opinion. If they find the opinion, do they require other opinion somewhere, or is their opinion is their final opinion, or either they can require some opinion somewhere? And the other one, Chairperson, after they have that, after they have things, what influence do they have the department to implement what they have been funded from their auditing? And the last one, Chairperson, do they have power to force the department to implement what they have recommended to the department? Because there is those recommendations which they have been submitted to the department. But do they have the power to force them to implement what they find? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Another question.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to get clear, Chair. Let me start by saying appreciating the presentation. It's well presented, although the presenter has apologized that he's too fascinated. He is fascinated with the good presentation. The second question, Chair, if I'm going to ask, is there going to be another session? Because will guide me, I would want at some stage to discuss the findings and some findings that have been happening by the Auditor General. So maybe that will be the next session. Thank you.
You like to do this, Honorable Kala. I asked for hands, and you didn't raise your hand.
Thanks, Chair. My apologies. Thanks for the report. I'm trying to, and you have worked with the Department of Human Settlements, and you have these other entities that report to the Department. My point is in terms of their findings, you find that one department, let's call it nature, or one entity, let's call it nature, it's got a qualified opinion as an entity. will that have a direct effect on the departmental opinion if the audit from entities are different from that of the department, or they have to be on the same length? So if you have two entities that have a qualified opinion, does it mean automatically that the department will receive a qualified as a result of those entities, because they have got their own simple report, their own management and so forth, they just report to the department? So how do you then measure the clue in arriving to your final audit opinion? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Gana. Maybe before I hand over to the officers, the difference between the adverse and audit and the discipline, even though in your presentation you said, because they are both right, and they are both almost the same thing, but the main problem with the disclaimer is that you couldn't get the evidence that you wanted. So one of the reasons why therefore it is higher than the address is that your own understanding that if that entity or that department would give that evidence, that situation might change to probably a qualified or an unqualified. That's why it's a disclaimer. Because if they can bring the evidence or the information, then the situation can change. Okay, thank you very much.
But maybe to emphasize some key principles, mainly around Section 195, good principles around public administration, there's major risk where we don't get information as auditors. It talks to transparency, accountability, and all the principles covered in Section 95. So that is very good to mention.
Yeah, can you respond to the clarities and questions?
Right. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The first question was regard to the unqualified opinion. The reason why I actually used the copter analogy, so I'm not sure if the copter so they could bear with me. The unqualified was findings and compliance on PO. Honorable Sekole, remember what I said is, when you look at quality, if I go to a private sector firm, a private company, not bound by legislation, these guys, they sell goods, to provide services, so they're raising their own money. So the only thing that they're compelled to comply with are the normal, you know, like the Basic Conditions of Employment Act for employees, and maybe some such legislation so they can pay their taxes. But other than that, they run their own business. So I'm a business owner, I'm my own business. So when I have to report at the end of the financial year, the only thing I have to comply with are the financial reporting frameworks. So my financial statements only have to be fed. So which means in the private sector, you will only find these four opinions. So any private firm will only tell you, I am unqualified and there's it. So don't have any other specific components in the audit report. So they just say, I fully present, I've accounted for my affairs appropriately, I'm happy. So that's why we say these opinions are financial opinions. So you are able to account for your debit and your credit correctly. But if you go back to this slide here, which says the AG must report on the financial statements, which now we have the financial opinions, and then also we must reach a conclusion on compliance and predetermined objectives. Now, where does that requirement come from? Remember, we are government institutions. We take money from the fiscus to go and spend to achieve certain objectives. So those are two key elements. So we get money, so we must spend it to achieve certain objectives. Our performance is there. And then also in spending it, we must make sure that those funding or those fees or spending complies with Section 217 of the Constitution. So the spending must be fair, equitable, and transparent. And those requirements are just a little bit included in more detail in the Treasury regulations. You must get the two quotations, you must advertise for 21 days, those details. So what sets us apart between government and the normal private sector guys who will just have the four opinions is the fact that in still accounting for my affairs, debit versus credit, 1 plus 2 must equal 3. I'm still required to do that. But when I was spending it, I wanted to achieve certain objectives, so I must report in terms of my performance. And then in spending the money, I was also supposed to make sure that the spending complies with Section 217 of the Constitution in it being fair, equitable, and transparent. So we actually have three tests that we should pass as government institutions before we can say we are clean. Which is, we say now, yes, if you have accounted for your debit and credit, so your financial statements are unqualified, they're happy. But it doesn't help that when you were spending, you were flouting all the legislative requirements and you were not getting the three quotations, and when you were attending you did not achieve your targets because you went to ask for money to achieve certain targets. So those are the three key elements which we must have all three things. You must be debits and credits must balance. You shouldn't have incurred significant non-compliance, so you should have been incurring in accordance with the legislation, and then you must have been achieving your targets and objectives. There shouldn't be material findings reported. And hence, we have this slide that says, for you to be able to get the rubber stamp that says good administration, financially unqualified, no material findings on compliance, no material findings on your performance. Okay. So thank you, Chair. The second question now also,
can I just cover the of application for members, maybe to make it as practical as possible? Let me use public works. I can't think of a specific program in housing. Apologies for that. If one looks at the expanded public works program for public works, the main aim of the program is to create opportunities, alleviate poverty, etc. So, when the budget is allocated, you'll get an amount allocated for expanded public works program. So, the department should have a strategic objective in the annual plan to say, this is how we are going to create these opportunities through ABC as a program. So, they implement agents in different provinces, if you wish to run those programs. So from the audit level, we know how much has been allocated. We just have to audit how that is spent and to an extent of how those opportunities are important physically on the ground. To say people are working on the program, they are paid so much, and how the whole allocation is also spent. So when you audit, you find that the cash has been spent. We can actually trace from the accounts cash out for public EPWP. We see the debits and credits, we tick. But when you come to the whole audit evidence to say how many people were employed in different programs, you find that there's no information available. Performance information reported, you might find that there's a number sitting in the annual report to say we have created so many employment opportunities, but from the audit trail, we don't get that adequate audit evidence. We even go to an extent of visiting those physical programs on the ground, as part of the audit. So from the qualification perspective, we make an assessment to say, yes, the cash has been expensed, but can you attest to say what is reported is useful and reliable, corroborated by audit evidence. You will find that in certain instances we qualify performance information reported, but however we will not qualify the financial statement audits because we can actually see the trail around the expenditure. In cases where we qualify the financials, let me maybe use another example. At the end of the financial year, any department should report how many services were provided and goods were delivered at year end, so that they reflect how much they owe. And we compare that to the budget that they've been given for a particular period. So if we can't attest the auditors to say services were delivered, goods were delivered at year end, but we don't know how much the department is owing at year end, then we qualify the balance. We say we cannot satisfy ourselves with that balance. So you'll see a qualification on accrual. But the risk is that after year end, the department will start paying for all the services that they provided, where they owe. But you may find that those services don't relate to the financial period that we have concluded, and they don't talk to the performance objectives that the department is reporting. So from the audit report, these are technical issues where you might find gaps, but they are talking to the mandate of the department and the risk associated with reporting, record keeping, as we are mentioning in the video, etc. So that those statements will be qualified. So we'll say we are happy with the salaries, we are happy with the revenue paid, we are happy with the trucks that we purchased furniture, but we don't know how much the department is owing at the end. So that is a qualification.
Yes.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you. The second question, Honorable Sitole, with regard to the legality of the opinion. I think it's critical to distinguish between the audit opinion and maybe any other opinion. Now, any other opinion will be based on whatever evidence or circumstances or scenario that is out there. And I know sometimes people tend to also look at a legal opinion. And people always saying out there that a legal opinion only goes as far as your pocket goes. So whenever you want to pay your legal advisor, you can get the opinion if you want. The audit opinion that we issue, because it's aligned to international standards of auditing, our audit procedures are designed aligned to the international standards of auditing. So we apply the same auditing standards that your Deloitte and Touche will apply, your KPMG will apply, your PricewaterhouseCoopers, all the big four firms which are multinational. And hence you remember in the video as well when they do a picture of the earth map saying that our standards here, that it is actually saying that our standards are international standards which even if you get a firm from outside, if they follow the same principles, they should come to the same conclusion as we have based on the evidence is there at the entity or the department. So even if we get KPMG, the department did not account for it appropriately, you will still get a qualified opinion. It's not that if you get somebody else out there, they will follow a different process and come to a different conclusion. So because of that, our opinions are relatively, I want to say accurate, but I sound like I'm patting my own back. But that's from that point of view, Honorable Sitole, because we use the international standards of quality. Any audit with appropriate experience, if they walk into an audit and follow due processes, they should be able to come to this in conclusion because of the processes that we've applied to the international standards auditing. Then, in terms of the influence over the departments, and I'm going to deal with the second element of the question, which was the power to enforce the recommendations, is, as the Office of the AG, our mandate is quite clear, like we discussed. We come and we review and we audit and we give feedback. So once we give feedback, because audit is a retrospective process, we come in the end and tell you what you did wrong, but at least we produce the report. But once we produce the report, it's government money that's been spent, we are also taxpayers, and hence we make the recommendations to say this is how you can fix it. As far as the enforceability thereof is concerned, that is now where we come to you. That's where we talk about the combined assurance model, so we give you the information. So Mr. Chairperson, we've been meeting the DG now for the past four times. This is the information we've been providing to the DG, and every time we go back and we find the same result. So that is up to the powers of the oversight bodies like yourselves, portfolio committees, to make sure that you are holding those entities accountable, that they must come every year. Once we issue the audit findings, that they must come with a post-audit action plan. They must show you exactly how they're going to or planning to address the shortcomings identified. And then we will, with your assistance, track those recommendations and make sure that they are implemented. But we cannot go and tell them, you didn't implement my recommendations. We can only come and report to Chairperson that my recommendations were implemented. Chairperson, please assist us by acting and holding them accountable. Because remember, the accounting officer reports to the minister, and the minister is accountable in terms of here to Parliament. And then, Honorable Kovash asked a question with regard to another session. Yes, ma'am, so what we do here is we've just given you so that if the department now comes in, they say, I've obtained qualified opinions, so at least you may know the technical terms, but you have an idea of what it is, and then that's the purpose of today's workshop. But the next session that we will have is what, when we come and do the tabling of the audit report. So when you come and table the audit report, you will get a similar document, but that document will be containing the actual outcomes of the UN settlement, the National Department of Human Settlements. So this when you get to see an opinion, or maybe not bad, let's go, they've got findings, so they need to focus on pre-determined objectives, or they've got compliance findings, so they need to focus on compliance, but at least they were able to account debit and credit, and they have proper record keeping and finances. Or if they're qualified, and you know, oh, we need to work on some area here. Or if you see the claim or edit, you know, you can pitch it to a color and say it's red, Rome is burning. Okay, then, so that will be our next session, ma'am. Okay, then the question from Honorable Ghana with regards to entities reported under department. How the constitution is set up in the PFMA as well, is you've got the national department. The national department is what we commonly refer to as a vote. So the money is allocated from the fiscal to the vote. So some departments, national departments, have got some implementation where they actually do and do some stuff themselves, or where they will say, we want to, in the case of human settlement, our mandate is housing delivery. But in the delivery of housing, there are key role players involved in this whole process. One of them is, for example, HDA. The Housing Development Agency must go and procure land. Once it's identified suitable land, then does the the provincial department come and actually build a house once. So everybody's got a role to play. NERSA in the NAFC to provide subsidy and the financing element for people so that we can make housing affordable and accessible. So in the delivery of housing, in those spectrum, everybody plays a role. Let's say the entities, because they are still government entities, they are funded by government money, but they don't have a vote number. So they must get their money from somewhere. So they get the money through the National Department of Human Settlement, transferred to them. But once the money is transferred, they are an individual entity, they are their own body in their own right, even though they are playing a role in the overall process. So they still report to the minister in terms of their performance and how they spend the money. But once the money is transferred, the accounting authority, which is either the board or the council of that entity, they are accountable for their own affairs. They must manage their own affairs in line with the PFMA and all the other legislative requirements. Then when we issue and we report, we issue two separate reports. So I'll use a tangible example, and you'll forgive me if I get read over the narcos over this later on, Che. We know Shara is encountering certain challenges within the human settlements portfolio. So if Shara were to get an unfavorable opinion, it cannot have a bearing on the impact of the outcomes of the department financially. But obviously, as an oversight body, you would be fully within your right to say, as the spectrum of the whole housing delivery, they have a key role to play. So who has been monitoring them so they fall that somewhere? But financially, when we give the report, they have their own report, cannot adversely impact on the department's outcomes. Chairperson, I think
you've clarified it very well. Thank you very much. Any other clarities? And I hope you are near the task. Yes, on that task.
So that you have any problems with the use of interns who might not be well explained in the intro.
Another part?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe this has been partly addressed. What I want to find out is sometimes you find that in the departments always present such glorious and colorful strike plans to portfolio committees. And when you go to do oversight in the department, you find that it is not as glorious as it appears on the strike plan. Then in that case, well, what happens? Because if that happens right through the financial year or the year under review, then what really has got to happen then? Maybe you've answered this. And another thing, page, slide number, I think it's 7 or 6, where you say in departments you don't tell them when you go to inspect, you don't state what exactly is the problem. I don't know whether I heard you properly, because you were over exaggerating. where I'm uncomfortable is when you identify a problem, when you go and do an audit in a particular government strat, you don't state to the people what the problem is. You just keep quiet and go into your work. I mean, how do you think you're going to be of any advantage to that department?
Thank you, Honourable. I think that he clarified is that once we find a fault, we do recommendations, but we can't enforce the recommendations. That's where we come in. But then we do recommendations to say, this is where we found a fault, this is what you need to do. It ends there. Us as the oversight committee, therefore, our job is therefore to make sure that what they have recommended is done. That's what he said.
Yeah. With your indulgence, Chair, I think Honourable Baum is, you are both right, but Honourable Baum is maybe asking that I say that we don't go there to find the problem. So what they are just actually saying, Honourable Baum, and I'll start with yours because yours is quite a contentious issue because it's used with fraud and error. So what it says is, my procedures are designed in such a way so that I look materially, so overall, does it fairly present? I do not do from 1 to 100 testing. I would not cover the entire books of the department, 100% testing. We do not provide assurance on everything that has been recorded in the department. So we say our procedures are designed in such a way that we do not go and look for fraud. It's not our job to go and look for fraud. But once we identify fraud, we do report to management. With management as the owners to have the proper processes in place, that their processes can identify when fraud happens. So they actually have processes in place that prevent fraud from happening. Your processes should be of such nature that it prevents fraud from happening, but in the event that it does happen, then you should have processes in place that it quickly identifies it and detects it so that you can put in remedial action. So it's just a difference that once we do go and to provide assurance on the figures, our processes are not designed that we go and we just go look for fraud. It's not our main objective. Our main objective is to say, you have reported, are you reporting and representing fairly what you are reporting on? Okay. Then with regard to the strategic plan question, Honorable Baum, yes, and that's exactly why, if we look at this slide, ma'am, it's important that when we speak to the departments during the strategic planning process, we ask them, your strategic plan, is it aligned, is it achieving, is it talking to your mandate, do you have any challenges, what initiatives do you have to address those challenges, the first step under strategic planning, because more often than not, the strategic plan will have nice key concepts in there, but what is actually happening on the ground is completely different. And just to maybe also give you an avenue, if there is such an instance identified where the department has submitted the plan, but you realize it's not on course, on power, you know, what we want it to achieve, the department can certainly change its strategic plan, but once it's changed again, it needs to go get approval from the executive authority again and then be resubmitted to the portfolio committee again. But if, certainly if during that they realize they're not on course or on track, they can amend their strategic plan and then resubmit it for approval. Okay, then the first question with regards to the interest, and I'll be guided by Rusi on this one because he immediately jumped answer before on the bump could even ask a question. The first instance or consideration that I'd like us to consider is just like your Deloitte and your PwC and KPMG, all your international auditing firms, the Office of AG is also aligned to the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. We are registered with them. We are a registered training institution. So which means on an annual basis, because we have a skill shortage and a skill gap in the market as well. So we are trying to produce also numbers that must go into the market. So we are a training institution, which means on every year when the children finish at university, they come and start their traineeship with us, what we call trainee auditors. So you have different levels of training auditors. We have 1 to 3 years, and then at the end of this of your 3 year cycle, you'll be a qualified professional, having passed all your exams, and then you are ready for release into the market to be a professional out there in the accounting and auditing field. But from an auditing point of view, we certainly have interventions in place to prevent, we try and have continuity on our audits. Like, for example, myself, Honorable Victoria will attest, I've been briefing this committee now for 4 years, and Claire will attest that I've been briefing the committee for 4 years. We have a manager also on the job for 4 years. Some of my trainees have also been now, they are in their 3rd year, they're starting to finish now, so hopefully I have molded them as qualified professionals so they can be released into the market. But you will always have that real training where you get a first year that's coming in. The guy who was the first year last year will now be the 2nd year, and the guy who was the 2nd year will be the senior on audit. But if you have a continuity, it's not that 1 year that keeps coming in and 1 year that goes out in the end, but you have the level of continuity. So from that point of view, there is that guidance that we did the first year comes on the audit to make sure that they are on par, they understand what the audit team is, they understand what the department is about. But obviously, as with all things, there will be investment time because that guy is also fresh out of university. He's still looking at the books, and so he must get familiar with how the auditing works. So certainly by the time he gets to his 2nd year, he's running a little bit better. The more practice you get, the more product you get. But we are an institution, but we do take cognizance of the impact by time we have continuity process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much from the AG's office. As we have said, we still have going to have a second bite on this when the annual report is presented. We will just keep giving you the general principles to make sure that by that time when they come with the audit report itself, you are able to ask specific questions and be able to at least know that you are now on the 2nd year. You are not in the 1st year. You are the training student. That's another thing I asked about. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break, a body break, because we're still going to continue with our committee meeting because now it's 10 past, which you didn't have your breakfast because it came when we were busy. So can we then take a break and then we start exactly half past 11 we're starting.